Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into a legal case that still has a huge impact on divorcing couples everywhere. Painter v. Painter.
Ah, yes, Painter.
It's all about how assets get split up when a marriage ends, you know, the house, the savings, maybe even that vintage comics book collection.
Oh, it can get really interesting.
Could everything be up for grabs? To help us untangle this legal knot, we have an expert in family law. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Thanks for having me.
So let's go back to 1972. Stephen and Joan Painter decided to end their marriage after nearly 20 years.
19, to be exact.
Right, 19. And this was right when New Jersey's no-fault divorce law was brand new. Seems simple enough, but as we'll see, things got complicated quickly. The trial court decided to exclude assets that Stephen had either inherited, received as gifts, or brought into the marriage. That sounds reasonable, right?
Well, not so fast. The Supreme Court stepped in and completely reshaped the landscape of divorce law in New Jersey with their decision in Painter v. Painter.
Really changed the game.
Oh, yeah. Big time. It all boils down to three key questions that they grappled with.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first one that caused so much debate?
The first was whether the concept of equitable distribution, the idea of dividing assets fairly, was just too vague. Could judges really apply this consistently, or would it just cause chaos and uncertainty?
Yeah, fair can be pretty subjective.
Mm-hmm.
What did the court have to say about that?
Well, the Supreme Court actually liked the flexibility of equitable distribution.
Interesting.
They said cookie-cutter solutions just wouldn't work in the complex reality of divorce.
Makes sense. Every divorce is different.
Right. So they created a framework to guide judges in making these decisions.
Okay. And this framework is where it gets interesting, right?
You bet.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the famous 13-factor test?
The one and only.
Wow. The one everyone whispers about.
Exactly. But before we get into that, let's unpack the other two questions the court had to deal with.
Okay. Sounds good.
The second question was all about what exactly is marital property. The trial court had excluded inheritances, gifts, and assets from before the marriage, but the Supreme Court had a different view.
So they basically said everything's fair game.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Their reasoning was threefold. First, they said the law itself didn't specifically exclude those types of assets.
Huh. Interesting.
It just says all property acquired during the marriage. Pretty straightforward.
Okay, I see.
Second, they argued that tracing back every single item would be a logistical nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
All those courtroom battles.
Couple fights over dustpan and bitter divorce.
Exactly. And third, and this is perhaps the most important reason, the court recognized that even inheritances and gifts can benefit from both spouses' work during the marriage.
Makes sense.
Think about it. Let's say one spouse inherits a house.
Okay.
The other spouse might contribute to the mortgage, renovations, general upkeep.
Right.
The court saw marriage as a partnership.
Both people contributing.
Exactly. Even to assets one person brought in.
So even though the law didn't specifically say these assets were included, the court thought it was more just and practical to consider everything.
That's a good way to put it. And that brings us to the third big question. When does the marriage clock actually stop for dividing up assets?
This is where it gets tricky, right?
This is where things can get strategic.
Does it end when they physically separate?
Nope.
When one of them moves out?
Not necessarily.
So when is it?
The Supreme Court chose the date the divorce complaint is filed as the cutoff point.
Ah, okay.
Bright line rule. No more funny business.
Like a spouse winning the lottery right before filing.
Exactly.
Prevents any last minute attempts to hide or move assets around.
Smart, right. It ensures a level playing field. But you mentioned something earlier that really got my attention.
The 13-factor test.
The 13-factor test. That's where things get really interesting.
Okay, tell me more. What are some of the things the court considers?
Well, some are pretty straightforward. The court looks at age and health of each spouse, their earning capacity, how long the marriage lasted.
Makes sense.
The standard of living during the marriage.
Yeah.
It's not just splitting things down the middle.
It's about getting the full picture.
Exactly. But there are some factors that can really surprise people.
Oh, I want to hear about those. What kind of surprises are we talking about?
Well, factor number four is a big one, property brought into the marriage.
So like that antique clock I inherited from my great-grandfather would be part of the equation.
It could be, yeah. It's not automatically excluded, but the court considers where it came from. They're trying to be fair to both sides.
Interesting. So they don't completely ignore inheritances or gifts.
Right. And then there's factor seven, which looks at the source of acquisition. Was it earned, gifted, inherited, this can really change how things are divided.
Okay, that makes sense.
For example, an inheritance that's been in one family for generations might be treated differently from a joint bank account you built together.
I see. So factor four considers what you brought in, and factor seven looks at how you got it.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. What else is interesting? Oh, factor 13 often raises eyebrows. It considers gifts between spouses.
So that diamond bracelet Stephen gave Joan during the marriage is on the table too.
You got it.
Wow. So even romantic gestures become part of this legal battle.
It just shows how complex things can get in a divorce. The court is really trying to figure out what's truly equitable, and that's not always simple.
Yeah, it's not just a simple legal process.
Right. There's a lot of history and emotion involved too.
So we've got these three big questions the court considered, and those 13 factors, that can be pretty surprising. But there's another twist to this story, right? You mentioned how Painter v. Painter flipped the script on who has to prove what belongs to who.
You're right. Before Painter, the burden of proof was on the person who wanted a share of an asset. They had to prove why they deserved it, even if it was something like an inherited property.
But then Painter changed all that.
It sure did. Now, the burden of proof is on the spouse who wants to keep an asset out of the marital estate. They have to prove why it shouldn't be included.
Wow, that's a huge change. It's not about proving what's yours. It's about proving what's not part of the shared pot.
Yeah, that's the key difference. And that can be a lot harder to do. Imagine trying to prove that a family heirloom passed down for generations somehow shouldn't be part of a marital property. It gets complicated.
Okay, we've talked about the three big questions the court addressed, those 13 fascinating factors, and this big change in the burden of proof. But I have to ask, why is Painter v. Painter still so important today? It happened over 50 years ago.
It's because it had such a lasting impact. Painter v. Painter solidified New Jersey's status as an all-property state when it comes to divorce.
All-property state.
Basically, it means almost all assets acquired during the marriage are considered part of the marital estate, regardless of whose name is on the title or how the asset was acquired. That's different from some other states that follow a community property system, where only assets acquired during the marriage through joint efforts are considered community property.
I see. So Painter really drew a line in the sand for New Jersey.
It did. And it set a precedent that's had a ripple effect across the country. It's been cited and upheld in so many cases since 1974, becoming the foundation of equitable distribution in New Jersey. Lawyers and judges still refer to it all the time. Even if someone disagrees with a specific outcome, the principles from Painter are very well established. Tough to overturn.
Okay, so we have a broad definition of marital property and a powerful legal precedent. Two big reasons why Painter is still relevant today. But what's the third reason this case still matters?
Well, it's those clear guidelines the court made to stop couples from trying to pull a fast one before going to court.
You mean like the marriage clock stopping when the divorce complaint is filed?
That's right. That one rule was a game changer.
No more shady asset moves at the last minute.
Exactly. Painter made the process much more transparent and some would say more fair.
It makes sense. It encourages honesty and keeps things above board. But wouldn't some people say this whole approach is just too broad? I mean, is it really fair to divide everything, even things with sentimental value?
That's a really good point. There are definitely some criticisms of the Painter approach. Some argue that it can lead to unfair outcomes, especially when one spouse comes in with more premarital assets or gets a big inheritance.
Yeah, it could feel wrong, especially if that inheritance has been in one family for generations.
Right. It's almost like you're dividing up family history.
And then there's the issue of sentimental value. Should that antique teapot from your grandmother be treated the same way as a joint checking account or a vacation home you bought together?
Really makes you think, doesn't it? Where do we draw the line between an economic partnership and personal history? That's a tough question, and I think courts are still trying to figure that out.
So is the Painter approach actually fair? What stands out to you about this case and its legacy?
I think what's interesting is how Painter v. Painter tried to balance those ideas of fairness and practicality. The court wanted a system that was both just and workable.
Right, so they decided to take a broad view of marital property, made some clear guidelines, and put the burden of proof on the person trying to keep an asset out.
Exactly. It's like they were saying, we're going for fairness here, and we're not going to make it easy for anyone to pull a fast one right before a divorce. But those criticisms about fairness and sentimental value are valid. They're important considerations.
Yeah, and it leads to another question. Is the Painter approach flexible enough to adapt to our changing world?
You're hitting on a really important point.
I mean, cryptocurrency, NFTs, all these digital assets, they didn't exist when PINCA was decided.
It really makes you wonder how this case would apply to these new types of assets. Times have changed and the law has to keep up, right?
That's why Painter v. Painter is still so relevant. It makes us question our assumptions about fairness, about what's practical, about what marriage really means as an economic partnership in a world that's so different from the one it was decided in.
It's a case that keeps on giving. Always something new to think about. It really does. And those are questions that courts will probably be grappling with for a long time. But for now, at least in New Jersey, the general rule is fairness, as defined by those Painter principles, wins out over sentimental value.
Interesting. So we've got these three big questions the Supreme Court looked at, those 13 factors that can really throw people off, and then this dramatic shift in who has to prove what.
You got it.
But I'm still curious about why Painter v. Painter is so relevant today. I mean, it's been over 50 years.
Well, it's a testament to the impact it had. Painter made New Jersey what's called an all-property state when it comes to divorce.
What does that mean exactly?
So in New Jersey, almost all assets that you get during your marriage are considered part of the marital estate, no matter whose name is on the title or how you got the asset. That's different from some states that have what's called a community property system. In those states, only things you get during the marriage through joint efforts are considered community property.
Gotcha. So Painter v. Painter really set the standard for New Jersey.
It did, and it set a precedent that's influenced courts all over the country. It's been cited and upheld in tons of cases since 1974, and it's really the bedrock of how we do equitable distribution in New Jersey. Lawyers and judges still use it as a guide today.
Wow. So even if someone disagrees with the outcome of a specific case, those principles from Peter are pretty much settled law.
Yeah, pretty much. They're hard to overturn.
So that's two big reasons Painter is still important. We have a broad definition of what's considered marital property, and it set a huge legal precedent. But what's the third reason? Why is this case from the 70s still relevant now?
Well, the third reason is because of those clear guidelines that the court set up to prevent couples from trying to hide assets before they go to court. You remember the marriage clock and how it stops when you file the divorce complaint?
Right, so you can't do any last-minute tricks to hide money or anything.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big deal. It made it much harder for couples to try to cheat the system. No more going on a crazy shopping spree or transferring assets to your friends before you file. Painter made the whole thing much more honest and fair. It's much harder to hide things now.
Makes sense. So more honesty, a clearer definition of marital property, and a lasting legal impact. That's why Painter v. Painter is still such a big deal.
That's a great summary. But like we said before, there are definitely criticisms of this approach. Some people think it goes too far.
Right. Like, is it always fair to split everything? Even stuff that has a lot of sentimental value.
That's a valid point. And some people say that it leads to unfair results, especially in situations where one spouse brings way more assets into the marriage or inherits a lot of money.
Yeah, I can see how that could feel unfair, especially if that inheritance has been in the family for generations.
Right, it's like splitting up someone's family history.
And then there's the whole issue of sentimental value. Like, should an antique teapot you got from your grandma really be treated the same as a joint checking account or a vacation home you bought together?
Yeah, where do we draw the line between what's a financial partnership and what's personal? That's a big question, and I think courts are still trying to figure that out. It's a tough one.
So, all things considered, do you think the Painter approach is fair? What really stands out to you about this case and its legacy?
Well, I think what's most interesting about Painter v. Painter is how it tries to balance the ideas of fairness and what's actually practical. They wanted to create a system that was both just and workable.
So the court went with a really broad definition of marital property, set some clear guidelines to follow, and made it so the person who wants to exclude something has to prove why it shouldn't be included.
Exactly. It's like they were saying, we're going to aim for fairness here, and we're not going to let people take advantage of the system right before a divorce. But I do think those critiques about fairness and sentimental value are important. They make you stop and think.
Yeah, for sure. And it makes me wonder if Painter is flexible enough to adapt to the world today. I mean, things change so fast.
That's a great point.
Think about things like cryptocurrency, NFTs, all these new digital assets.
Yeah.
That stuff didn't exist when Painter was decided.
Right. It really makes you wonder how this case would be applied to these new types of assets. Things change, and the law has to change with them.
That's so true. I guess that's why Painter v. Painter is still so relevant. It makes us really question what we think about fairness, about what's practical, about what marriage really means as a financial partnership, and all of that in a world that's completely different from when the case was decided.
Absolutely. It's a case that keeps on giving. Always something new to consider.
Okay, we've really gotten into the details of Painter v. Painter. We talked about how it affected New Jersey law, those 13 factors that could be pretty surprising, and even some of the criticisms about the case.
Yeah, we've covered a lot. Hopefully our listeners have a better understanding of this landmark case and how it still shapes divorce proceedings today.
Me too. It's amazing how a case from the 70s can still be so important. It really shows you how much power the law has to shape our lives. And as our society changes, the law has to keep up.
I agree. It's a constant evolution.
That's a good way to put it. So for everyone listening out there, maybe you're going through a divorce yourself, maybe you're a law student interested in family law, or maybe you're just curious about how this all works. What's the main thing to take away from Painter v. Painter?
I think the most important thing to remember is that in New Jersey, the courts look at marital property really broadly. If you got it during your marriage, chances are it's going to be considered part of what gets split up. And the person who wants to keep an asset separate is the one who has to prove why it shouldn't be included.
So you really need to be ready to show proof if you want to keep something separate.
You got it. Documentation is key. Keep good records of your finances, especially anything you get during the marriage. And if you're dealing with a divorce, talking to a good lawyer who specializes in family law is really important. They can help you understand your rights and what you need to do.
That's great advice. And don't forget, that marriage clock stops the second the divorce complaint is filed. So no big spending sprees or transferring property at the last minute. Just be honest about your finances throughout the whole process.
Honesty is definitely the best policy when it comes to divorce.
Okay, I think we've done a really thorough job covering Painter v. Painter. We've talked about the facts of the case, those 13 interesting factors, and how it's impacted New Jersey law.
It's been a great conversation. I hope our listeners have a better grasp of this important case and how it continues to shape divorce cases today.
Absolutely. And who knows, maybe we'll revisit Painter in the future as the legal landscape changes. It's a case that keeps raising new questions as time goes on.
I like that idea. There's always more to explore, especially with technology and our culture constantly changing.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Painter v. Painter. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it really does. It really makes you think about how this case from the 70s is still affecting how we think about divorce today. And this is just one example of how the law has to change with the times.
Yeah, it's a reminder that the law isn't set in stone. It changes and grows with us.
Exactly. Painter v. Painter definitely caused a lot of discussion and debate, but it also brought up some important questions about fairness and about marriage as an economic partnership, questions that are still relevant today.
Absolutely. And as we see new kinds of property and assets emerge, like we already have, we're going to have to keep figuring out how these ideas of equitable distribution apply. It's a really fascinating area of law that's constantly evolving.
So for our listeners out there, maybe you're going through a divorce, maybe you're in law school and really into family law, or maybe you're just interested in this stuff. What would you say is the most important thing to remember from Painter v. Painter?
I think the big takeaway is that in New Jersey, the courts have a very broad view of what counts as marital property. If you got it during the marriage, it's probably going to be considered part of the marital estate, and it doesn't really matter how you got it or whose name is on the title.
So don't try to hide those prized possessions. And remember, the burden of proof is on the person who wants to keep an asset separate. You need to have evidence to back up your claim.
Documentation is key. Keep track of your finances, especially anything you acquire during the marriage, even if you think it should be considered separate property.
That's where a good lawyer can really make a difference, right?
Oh, absolutely. A skilled family law attorney can really help you navigate this complex area of the law and protect your interests.
Good advice. And just one final reminder. The marriage clock stops ticking the minute that divorce complaint is filed. No last-minute spending sprees or trying to transfer assets. Just be honest about your financial situation from the beginning.
Transparency and honesty are always the best way to go.
Well, I think we've really done a great deep dive into Painter v. Painter today. We covered the background of the case, those 13 fascinating factors the court considers, and the impact this case has had on New Jersey law.
It's been a great conversation, and I hope our listeners have a better understanding of this landmark case and how it continues to influence divorce cases today.
I think so, too. It's incredible how a case from the 1970s can still be so relevant. It really shows you how the law shapes our lives and that as society changes, the law needs to adapt too.
I agree. It's constantly evolving.
That's a perfect way to put it. Thanks to everyone for joining us for this deep dive into Painter v. Painter. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
It was a pleasure.